So I offer one reflection for you to consider for your practice this morning, and then three different instances that you might come across during the day. So today you might consider the balance in your practice between being active and receptive. In your exploration of body, of Vedana, of mind states, of moods, we need to be active. This practice takes some energy, a clear intention. And we've been exploring, and we use words like exploring and investigating and seeing deeply and looking into. And there is a certain beautiful activity in this that can serve us to see deeply. We bring our lenses of insight of the three characteristics, and we're active, we're deliberate at times. This too will pass. This is not me, this is not mine. This is dukkha. There can be, and there is necessarily, a thrust. And at times we can see that there is a going towards. We have something in mind that we want to look into. And sometimes that going towards the object can be very obvious, like there's that knee pain and boom, I'm going to look into it and see its impermanence. And sometimes that activity can be very, very subtle. This activity can be liberating, can open doors. It can allow us to get some perspective and distance and not take things so personally. It can allow us to look deeply into that interdependent mystery of the way I attend and what I see are co-arising. This is powerful. This activity is powerful, as you probably see and probably recognize. But without receptivity, and I'm making them very binary in this case, we're probably in a combination of all of them all of the time. But without receptivity, where we don't just go towards something, we can rest back. We can allow the objects of experience and the whole display to impact us, to touch us, to come towards us, to penetrate us. The willingness to be touched by the experience, by the pain, by the beauty, by the quiet, by the silence, to let it impact us. Without that marriage of the receptivity and the activity, then our looking deeply can become a tool that only knows how to take things apart. At one extreme, and I'm painting them as a polarity at this point so that we can play with that spectrum. At one extreme, that looking deeply and seeing deeply could become a weapon of mass deconstruction, right? That's what we have to do. Some of you might have seen that, and it can be very exciting at first, or, yeah, not at first, it can be very exciting to see the power in being able to see things dissolve, in being able to see that even the way I'm attending, that whole piece can come unbound and unstuck. It's like magic. And sometimes we can pick up that tool and we may do well to just check, is it married with the receptivity that does not demand that things unbind? So today, just consider these ideas if they feel relevant to you. The receptivity, when it is imbalanced, because it too can have its own extreme, the receptivity imbalance is able not only to see and touch and probe and penetrate, but can sit back and hear and listen and allow the world to come towards her. This receptivity can be impacted by the whole shape and feel of the phenomena that arises. So that our dispassionate lenses are a dispassion that can hold passion, that can hold passion, that doesn't make a preference or a hierarchy of whether that passion, in this case the suffering, whether that passion unbinds or does not unbind. Compassion to suffer with. To suffer with without becoming that thing. To suffer with, to be impacted by, to feel, to hear, to listen to suffer with, to resonate with, without awareness and attention shrinking around that object anxiously, how am I going to fix it? But resting back, then our dispassion and our compassion are one and the same. In the tradition, we have the image of Kuan Yin, she who hears the cries of the world and pours her healing balsam. She does not try and anxiously fix the cry. Her world does not shrink to that being the only thing on the table. She knows it is not me or mine. She knows it doesn't have its own existence. And in the tradition, Kuan Yin is also coming from or rooted in the image of Avalokiteshvara. And it is the story is said of Avalokiteshvara that he came to awakening, she came to awakening, they came to awakening by inquiring, who hears? Who hears? So just pick up from that whatever you will. You know, the extreme of the receptivity, of course, will be where we're so receptive, we're so impacted by, we're so affected by what's arising, that, and we have no tools, we have no activity to respond, to see deeply. We start to merge with what arises. We bond to it, glue with it. We're stuck in it. Engulfed by it. Taken for a ride by it. But this receptivity, when it is rooted in the boundless heart, and when it's rooted in awareness, then that which hears, that which is able to be impacted by, is bright, is active, is precise in knowing what's needed. Ah, let me sense the Vedana here, unpleasant. Unpleasant. Ah, that's helpful, that unglues a little bit. A little bit more space. Oh, what's needed here? And sometimes what's needed can surprise us. So yes, we go in with our useful Dharma lenses. Of course, they're invaluable, powerful, profound. We can train them more and more and more and more deeply. And we have our awareness open at the edges to sense what's needed. So today, three possible scenarios just to consider briefly. We'll sit together. First one is, you're sitting, you're very quiet, you're deepening, and again, this thread of deepening whole body, to know this Kuan Yin aspect of our being, we need this whole body here, deeper and deeper and wider and wider. And you're quiet, you're switched on, you're bright, nothing much appears to be going on. And there's a light playing, a light activity. Nothing's wrong particularly, in fact it's lovely, it might be really lovely. And still we can bring the activity, the beautiful Dharma activity of playing with our, the insight ways of seeing. What happens when I bring the recognition of dukkha to things that aren't even terrible or difficult? Knowing that dukkha isn't just about what's unpleasant or hard. In a way, well not in a way, in a very real way, it's to anything. To anything. So there I am, quiet, minding my own business, breath is coming in and out, widening, deepening, sensing. Ah, not out of judgment, not out of any problematic nature, but this is dukkha. This is dukkha. This is dukkha. What happens when we turn towards whatever arises and recognize it cannot be our final home, however good it gets? Not as a dismissing of it, not as a judgment of it, but what happens? Follow the effect in the consciousness when you may apply any of our practices that we've been offering. And it can be very surprising. Listen for the response. Or to the tiniest, tiniest tangle that's not even a big deal in your energy body. There's a tiny tangle in the heart. And there's so much room around it. And you don't even have to attend to it. But something in the heart says, let me see, let me play. What happens if I hold that in that embrace? Ah, breathing with it, this is dukkha. See. Follow. Be prepared to be surprised. These lenses take us deeper into the mystery that calls us. Another scenario, you're quiet and you're seized in a moment, before you know it, by some kind of contraction. And you can see, because there is enough samadhi and enough perspective and enough breath, you can see in that moment, oh, well, just about to go down a rabbit hole here. Right? Something comes to mind, a contact arises of, why did that person look at me funny in the corridor out there by the notice board? What were they thinking? Oh, and you can see it. You can see the whole thing begin to construct itself. And in that moment, out of sheer love and not out of avoidance and not out of anything else, it's like, oh, I see you. You are not bound to pick it up. You do not have to go there. You do not have to make that your home. And out of love, we can see this is not me, this is not mine, and it can dissolve in an instant. And our love is there, and our ground is there, and we can breathe out. And we can deepen. Third scenario, we're not quiet. We're not grounded. Something's going on, and it really feels like me. And it really feels like you. And it's totally believable, and maybe not me, not mine, applies to everything except this. Okay, what am I going to do now? Stop. In the moment you recognize it, stop. You've already stopped. In the moment, there's a moment of mindfulness, and all you know is you don't know what's going on, what the hell's going on, but something's going on. Stop. Feel your feet, feel your backside onto the ground. Step number one is stop. Step number two, acknowledge that you're in a bind. And name that to yourself. Oh, this is a bind. Acknowledge there's a spin. You know how it is with this horrible pink gooey sweet stuff called candy floss? You have that here even? I'm hatra. Well, hatra. It's like that. It's like the stick, you know, the small wooden stick has gone inside the tub. You were minding your own business. Something happened. The stick goes in the tub and whoosh, there it is. Suddenly you've got a stick of gooey, yucky stuff on a stick. And God knows how it got there. And there you are. Stop. Acknowledge this is the spin. You can even confess, here's my stick of candy floss. I'm sure it's someone else's fault, but anyway, here it is. Here it is. Stop. Acknowledge this is the spin. Number three. And breathe there. It's not like, okay, stop, acknowledge the spin, let's hope it goes away. No, stop, acknowledge the spin. Number three. Acknowledge the tone and the mood of the spin. Acknowledge the hurt or the bitterness or the envy. Or acknowledge the glow. These are the harder ones to see when we're actually the object of marvelousness in the spin. We don't see that it's a spin. That's the advanced course, right? But sometimes we can see that there's a spin of how great I am. Oh, acknowledge the glory or the pride or the glow. Number four, acknowledge the shape in the energy body. You might notice you've collapsed. They always look at me like that. You might notice you're puffed out. You might notice you're tight and contracted. Acknowledge the quality in the energy body. And number five, watch out for the counter spin. Oh, here I am in this candy floss, don't know how I got here. Okay, let's try not me, not mine. Not me, not mine, not me, not mine, not me, not mine. Oh, counter spin. I've got two sets of candy floss going now. Okay, maybe I should be mindful of my breath. Poof. Okay. Okay, counter spin. Oh, this is terrible. Doubt. Oh, yeah, this is crap, this Dharma. Doesn't work. I had that insight once. counter spin. Stop. Mindful. Oh, it's a moment of mindfulness. Yeah, but mindfulness doesn't work. And then something dawns. So it's like this, despite yourself, despite ourselves, there's this dawning because we've done all this work this week, and there's some awareness of what's going on, and you stop. And there's a breath that doesn't feel like it's about all of that. And then these plates are still spinning. Stop. Stop right in the middle of the spin. And feel your feet and feel your backside and open your body to the one who hears. Hearing. What do you hear? And when our awareness, if we take refuge out of the spin and in the knowing of what is happening, in that moment we can hear. And sometimes it's really important to acknowledge what we're hearing. But we're hearing it. We haven't become it. There's something that hears right through the middle of that spin. And what might we hear? Oh, I never get this done. Everyone else is getting it except me. Hearing. And if we hear deeper and deeper, we can start to hear the inference of the self that is born in this spin. Keep hearing. Yeah. God, this is rubbish. I'm rubbish. I'm never any good at these kinds of things. I should have just... Ah. Here's the one who feels deficient. And when we really hear the inference of the self that is there, and we really hear it and reflect it, it's like a key. And in that key, something relaxes. The door opens and something relaxes. Something is heard. And when something is heard, then there can be silence. Other times, oh, I've got the hardest yogi job here. Well, it's not fair. Mine takes longer than everybody else's. I'm going to run. Ah, listening, hearing. Ah, here's the one who feels like no one looks out for them. I've got you, my darling. Breathing. And when we really hear, something relaxes. Something releases. It never was me or mine. But it feels like it. And compassion acknowledges this. So let's take our seat. And if the mind's going, what were all those six things? What were they? I've got to know what those six things were so I can really get out of that sticky mess when I'm in it next time. Oh, here's the one who feels a little bit, like, desperate. I've got you, my darling. It's not the first time you've arisen in my life. Take your seat. Give your weight back to the ground. Dare to let your body breathe out all the way to the end, to fade, to cease. To become your teacher. Active and humble. Receiving your body as they breathe in. As they breathe out. Awake, upright. And gentle.